Listening to CJLO 1690 AM. It's not 1690. I would not be welcome there.
For CJLO News, I'm Donald Roberge. CJEPs throughout the province are struggling to adjust their academic calendars in the wake of an upcoming week-long strike that will see schools close between December 8th to the 14th. The heads of unions involved in a common front of public service workers announced the strike last week in response to the Quebec government failing to meet the union's demands. Yet the strike is set to occur during a key period in the semester, coinciding with exams and a scheduled province-wide language test needed for graduation. Though some CJEPs have extended their semester further into the month of December to compensate, most schools have had to reschedule exams after the holidays, affecting travel plans for students as well as for those starting at university in January. Quebec Family Minister Suzanne Roy announced the appointment of a chairperson for a new advisory committee addressing issues regarding gender identity. Diane Lavallée, a nurse and administrator, as well as the former president of the Council on the Status of Women, will lead the group. The committee will also comprise family doctor Jean-Bernard Trudeau and law professor Éric Taillon. The three members will study current policies while consulting experts in LGBTQ plus issues while working towards a report scheduled for 2025. Premier François Legault promised to create the committee in the wake of national protests over gender identity in schools. There was a protest in Montreal against Bill 31 last weekend. CJLO reporter Katie Brady has more.
Tenants and housing advocates across Quebec are calling for a halt to Bill 31, the CAQ's bill on housing. For renters in Montreal, the bill threatens to ban the practice of lease transfers, among other changes. Kristen Goodall, an NDG resident who got her apartment via a lease transfer in 2020, also co-founded a lease swapping group on Facebook. She told CJLO that lease transfers are an important part of the Montreal housing market.
And I definitely think a lot of those groups are very queer-based also. Lease transfers are a great way to fight discrimination because you present the landlord with one candidate and they have to be very specific about why they're refusing them versus when a landlord is looking for someone, they can just like not call someone back if they don't like them. You know, like it's a lot harder to prove discrimination when there's, you know, tens of people looking at one apartment versus when you present the landlord with one person.
Yaya Bauman is a member of Front de lutte pour un immobilier populaire. The housing rights group co-organized protests across the province this Saturday and continue to make several demands of the government to solve the housing crisis.
Our demands that led to the protest was removal of France-Hélène Duranceau as from her position as housing minister for many reasons, namely Bill 31, but also because it's been proven times that she is in conflict of interest. She comes from she's a real estate agent. Her prior work was a real estate agent.
As well as lease transfer, debates have swirled around other proposed elements of the bill. The CAQ has characterized Bill 31 as a protection against rent evictions because under the bill, landlords would have to pay tenants up to a year's rent if evicted. Opposition critic for housing and municipal affairs, Virginie Dufour, also proposed an amendment to allow landlords to ask for a deposit only in the case of tenants with pets. But Bauman thinks such measures only open the door to further violations of tenant rights by landlords.
We can also imagine that a tenant, a single mom with three kids, will be asked for a security deposit when renting a new apartment if such a door would be open. And then we could ask for, many more reasons to ask this kind of security deposit.
Premier Legault suggested that he may be willing to walk back some aspects of the bill, but has otherwise held firm on the lease transfer ban. CJLO reached out to Minister Duranceau's office for comment, but at the time of this broadcast, had not yet heard back. In Montreal for CJLO, I'm Katie Brady.
For more, visit CJLO 1690 AM podcasts on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I follow his.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Cadenza Montreal. I'm Stephanie Manning and thanks for joining me today on this Wednesday afternoon. Got a great show today with one interview and then some really interesting music. So There's the interview today will be conductor Simon Rivard. He's guest conducting the ensemble I Musici de Montréal on Thursday, so tomorrow night, in a program called Let's Tango, which is really interesting, incorporating dance and visual elements, but I'll let him talk more about that later. Gonna start with a quick music opening to sort of get us set up for the interview, and then we will return with that interview, which I recorded with him yesterday. In the spirit of this tango program, which features pieces by renowned tango composer Astor Piazzolla, our first piece today is Danza Criolla by Piazzolla. Short little piece, very fun. This is from the recording by the Orchestra Symphonique de Montréal and conductor Charles Dutoit. All right, 1 second. There's some technical difficulties.
The centerpiece in my home. Already I need you. Someday I'll plant seeds with you.
Apologies. Again, this will be second take, the Astor Piazzolla's Danza Criolla.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Cadenza Montreal on CJLO 1690. I'm joined by conductor Simon Rivard, who is currently the music director at the Edmonton Opera. He's also a Montrealer, and local audiences may have seen him this summer conducting the OSM at their concerts in the parks. This week, he'll join I Musici de Montréal for a performance on Thursday. Simon, welcome to the show.
Hello. Nice to be here.
So this performance is called Let's Tango, a title which is taken pretty literally with the inclusion of dancers as well as video production. How do you as a conductor interact with all of these elements?
I mean, it doesn't happen that often that we have to interact with dancers. Like, I'm not a ballet conductor. I'm mostly an opera or symphonic conductor. And in this instance, the dancers will be behind me, which is even more strange because usually the dancers, when you conduct ballet, are in front of you so you can see them. So that's going to be very interesting. But I'm a former tango dancer. Like when I was 20, I took tango lessons as well. So like it's a style that I know pretty well. Also, the video production will come in the first half because the first half is dedicated to the works of Carlos Gardel, who is a tango singer from the beginning of the 20th century. And you'll have video projection of him singing. We'll have audio also of him and his orchestra that will blend with our orchestra. So that's a very special show to conduct. There are many, many moving pieces.
Yeah, exactly. And that's so interesting about you having a background as a tango dancer, because I was going to ask about, you know, the music choices really focus on these two great tango composers, Carlos Gardel and Astor Piazzolla. And so what interests you the most about this kind of music?
For an orchestra that is usually more versed in the classical style, the groove of the tango is very interesting, because it's something that is very grounded. Like, although it moves sometimes, it's very much in the pocket. It needs to follow the steps of the dancers. So it's a big challenge for an orchestra that is, you know, usually plays Beethoven and Tchaikovsky and modern music, to play this completely different style and with a different kind of flair, different kind of groove and of freedom. So yeah, it's a journey. It's a journey. We started the rehearsals yesterday, and already we can feel the sound of the orchestra changing in contact with that type of music.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely a different challenge than the standard classical rep. Have you worked with this group or these musicians before?
No, it's my first time. So it's like our first date doing something. It's like when you have a first date and you decide to do an activity that is way out there. You know, it's not a coffee. It's not, no, we just go, we would go bungee jumping. Just we're going straight in.
A different style for sure. Yeah. So, and you mentioned that rehearsals have already started. So how are you're seeing the development with the, like getting into this tango groove?
Yeah, it's going very well. So yesterday we had only the orchestra. Today we added the singer, Pierre Rancourt, who's a baritone, who will impersonate Carlos Gardel. And we added a pianist also to the group. And this afternoon, we're adding a harp tango instrument, the bandoneon. It's played by Jonathan Goldman. It's the typical tango instrument.
So yeah, lots of moving parts. And I noticed the pieces are like, you know, smaller kind of chamber music. Are you sort of at the podium for all of it, or are there pieces that are unconducted at all?
There are just maybe one or two pieces that are unconducted. There's one with singer, piano, and solo violin that I will not conduct, but the rest, I'm pretty much in charge.
Great, yeah. And you mentioned the dancers being behind you earlier. How is that? Like, have you rehearsed with the dancers yet? Have you got to experience that yet?
No, we'll meet them tomorrow. So I'm mentally prepared. I visualized it, but we'll see tomorrow how it goes.
Yes, for sure. And I know you're short on time, so before I let you go, there was one thing I thought was interesting. I learned that you have a monthly feature on a Radio Canada program in Toronto where you talk about classical music. I'm just curious what you enjoy about sharing your thoughts in that way.
I love the freedom, because classical music, contrary to what people usually think, is not very, it's not one style. It's several styles. I can talk about film music. I can talk about music from the 19th century, opera, Baroque music, Renaissance. I can talk about what's happening right now in the world of classical music, new operas, new soloists, people who win competitions. Like, it's so varied that instead people think that, oh, a feature talking about Mozart or Beethoven all the time. No, no, I don't think I even did one feature on Mozart or Beethoven. You know, I'm able to talk about so many things and social issues and talk about the Middle East, talk about so many things related to classical music. So I love the freedom and the fact that it's such a vast subject.
Yeah, exactly. I think people who aren't as familiar don't realize how much is currently going on in this world. And as you said, lots of different influences, and this concert is included in that, with definitely not your standard Beethoven or Mozart.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Simon, thanks so much for joining me today, and enjoy the performance on Thursday.
Thanks, Stephanie. Have a great day.
Again, that was my talk with Simon Rivard yesterday. So that performance is tomorrow night at the UCOM concert hall, the name of which is escaping me at the moment, but I will remember it in a minute. So up next, I thought that it would be interesting to, you know, kind of in the spirit of Christmas and holiday music, kind of have something that's related but a little more out there. And I remembered this wonderful piece by the contemporary composer John Adams called El Niño. The subtitle is A Nativity Oratorio. I saw this piece performed last year with the Cleveland Orchestra and had the opportunity to review it, and I found it such a fascinating piece. For a little bit of a background on it, it's been programmed in all sorts of creative ways. The premiere was accompanied by a silent film. And in the Spoleto Festival's 2014 performance, there was a crew of puppeteers. The performance I saw was a kind of concert-style, straightforward performance, but nonetheless, the music is really striking. Basically, it's a modern retelling of the birth of Jesus, but it tells that biblical story from new perspectives, primarily by centering women's voices. So it's combining texts from traditional texts from places like Wakefield Mystery Plays, along with ancient and contemporary Latin American poetry. So I wrote in my review of this at the performance last year that essentially Adams set out to write his own Messiah, but while Handel's work is unquestionably a celebration, Adam takes a more nuanced approach, tackling big questions about the nature of miracles, pregnancy, and motherhood. So it's a long, long work, but I thought I'd just play the opening 6 minutes of the piece. I think it's really striking and a very, very indicative of the rest of the work, which I encourage you to go listen to, or in the chance that it's being performed anywhere, absolutely. I would personally would love to go see it again. So this is Kent Nagano and the Orchestra Berlin on their recording of John Adams' El Niño, the first movement called The Birth of a Maiden. Thank you. is the end of the very dramatic, well, the very dramatic end of the opening movement of John Adams's El Nino Oratorio, performed there by Kent Nagano and the, hold on one second, Kent Nagano and the Deutsche Symphony Orchestra Berlin. And that segment was called I Sing of a Maiden. I believe I said it incorrectly before it was played. But yes, I Sing of a Maiden, the opening to El Nino, a Nativity Oratorio. Very, very characteristic of Adams' work, just contemporary, but I find it quite gripping. And something I forgot to mention, almost the most interesting part about this, is the oratorio features three countertenors. So basically three male singers with very high voices, which is like just so interesting. And they sing together in these crunchy harmonies that they're supposed to represent the angel. So it's kind of got this like ethereal but also creepy value to it when the three of them are singing together. It's so interesting. So I may be listening to the rest of this piece later because I just find it very interesting and connected to, you know, sort of connected to the holiday season in some way. So speaking of that, I was thinking more generally about sort of like not necessarily pieces, but instruments associated with this time of year. And I think the trumpet, you know, is pretty standard in terms of an instrument that represents this time period. You know, Handel's Messiah, the trumpets shall sound, like, you've got the trumpet featured very prominently. So I thought that I would play a trumpet work. This is a new concerto to me that I heard just last year by Johann Neruda. And this is Lucienne Renaudin-Vary. She recorded this work with the Luzerner Symphony Orchestra, and this is the first movement, Allegro.
Thank you.
welcome back to Cadenza Montreal on CJLO 1690. That was Johann Neruda's Trumpet Concerto in E-flat major, performed there by trumpeter Lucien Renaudin-Vary and the Luzerne Symphony Orchestra. That was the first movement, Allegro. Quite a nice concerto, very typical of its time and its style, but I had not heard it, and I think it fits quite well. You know, these Baroque and early music, I feel like, becomes very prevalent around this time of year. And I think it's very fitting, again, with trumpet as a great instrument that represents this time of year and just a great instrument in general. Shout out to those listening who play the trumpet. And in building off of the trumpet theme, I thought of another piece that I do love quite a bit, which is Aaron Copland's Quiet City. This is quite an interesting instrumentation, but double reed players know it because it is, are often familiar with it because it's for trumpet, English horn, which is basically a lower pitched oboe, and strings, which is, I can't really think of another piece like it, but the timbre of the trumpet and the English horn combined creates some really, really beautiful moments. So this recording is of the New York Chamber Symphony, Neil Baum and Mark Hill, and Jared Schwartz, I believe, is the conductor. So yes, enjoy how these timbres interact with each other, this combination of trumpet and English horn in Aaron Copland's Quiet City.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Cadenza Montreal, and that was Aaron Copeland's Quiet City for trumpet, English horn, and string orchestra. That was the New York Chamber Symphony conducted by Jared Schwartz. The oboist there was, English hornist there was Mark Hill, trumpeter Neil Baum. Very interesting piece, and like I said at the beginning, the interplay between those two instruments is really fascinating, and lots of variations in these recordings too, because there are plenty of different ways of playing English horn, particularly around the world. The European and American styles are quite different, so there's a lot of different interpretations of the piece, lots of recordings to choose from, though, thankfully. We'll take a quick ad break, and we will return in a moment. Welcome back to Cadenza Montreal on CGLO 1690. So continuing from the sort of trumpet concerto we had earlier in the hour, there's another concerto that I was listening to this week that really caught my attention. I actually saw this while scrolling on Instagram, but thought it was a fantastic piece. It's a concerto for euphonium, which is an unusual instrument even to those familiar with orchestral repertoire, because it's primarily used in wind band. It has a huge, long storied history in wind band, but is very uncommonly used in orchestra. It's basically essentially a smaller version of a tuba, but the timbre is beautiful. To me, it's the brass equivalent of like the bassoon sound. And I always said if I played a brass instrument, it would be the euphonium, because I grew up playing in wind bands, and bassoons even often sat next to euphoniums, so I heard them all the time. And yeah, this piece really caught my attention, called Symphonic Variants by James Curnow. And pretty short piece, but some great euphonium playing in it, and it's kind of a theme and variations sort of deal. So I thought I would play the final two movements, the third movement presto and the fourth movement finale. You'll get a sense of both the fast technical playing and sort of the beautiful lyricism of the instrument through this. So this recording is from Japanese euphonium player Shiochiro Hokozono and the Kinki University Band. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Cadenza Montreal on CGLO 1690. That was James Curnow's Symphonic Variants, the third and fourth movements. It's a work for euphonium and wind band, solo euphonium there, Shiochiro Hokazono. I just love that piece. I was introduced to it this week and really grateful that that crossed my social media feed because I really enjoy it. I encourage you to listen to the full piece as well. Didn't have time to play it in its entirety today, unfortunately. That about takes us to the end of the show. And as usual, I'm left in the position of trying to play something really quick before the hour is up. So thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Cadenza Montreal. We'll be back next week. And for the short little ender of today, returning to a classic in the theme of brass world, we're already here. This is the Canadian Brass Skating from their album Christmas Time Is Here. ¶¶